Up and Vanish Weekly is released every Wednesday and brought to you absolutely free. But for 1 week early access and ad-free listening, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com or on Apple Podcasts. If you're already a subscriber, thank you for your support.
This podcast discusses mature and sensitive content, including descriptions of violence that may be triggering for some audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hey y'all, welcome to Up and Vanish Weekly. I'm Maggie Freeling. Recently, we shared with you our conversation with pathologist assistant Nicole Angemi. Nicole was just one of the many experts and influencers our team had the opportunity to speak with at CrimeCon 2025 in Denver. And today, we wanted to share another one of those conversations. Annie Elise is creator of the YouTube series 10 to Life, with over 1.5 million subscribers. And she hosts the podcast Serialistly. She's become a leading voice in the true crime genre and covers a variety of cases, both old and new. If you spent any time over the summer keeping up with the Karen Reed trial, odds are you saw some of Annie's coverage. Our producer John sat down with Annie in Denver and discussed a variety of topics, including her entry into true crime and recent cases she's covered on her platforms. And it sounds like she has a lot more to come. So here's a little bit of John and Annie's conversation.
Annie, thank you for sitting down with me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So for anyone who may not know you, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Annie Elise. I am the host of the YouTube channel 10 to Life and the true crime podcast Serialistly with Annie Elise. And we cover all sorts of true crime, old cases, new cases, breaking cases, kind of the whole gamut.
So we're sitting down together live at CrimeCon. Any major takeaways from this year? This isn't your first CrimeCon, correct?
No, this is my second. And I feel like I have the same takeaway every year. I just feel, it sounds so cheesy and cliche, but I feel like there's just such an incredible community that has been built here with victims' families, survivors, the media, everybody. And so I always come out of this just feeling very like positive and uplifted, just because everybody finally gets to connect in person rather than digitally. And it's just incredible.
Have you had a favorite moment from the weekend?
I did do a live episode, and I feel like just the response to that, and again, being able to connect with so many people in person, that was definitely a highlight for me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So if anyone ends up listening to this that hasn't been to a crime con, like, how would you explain what the conference is?
Usually I'll lead and be like, it's kind of like what you think when you hear Comic-Con, but not that, obviously. But I think that there's kind of like a weird misunderstanding of what it's all about. I like to say, you know, it's not just people who enjoy the true crime or are interested in true crime. It's a lot of victims. It's a lot of families. It's a lot of education and awareness. And so it's like there's so much education and value that comes out of a weekend like this. So it's not just about, you know, exploiting true crime or doing anything gross like that. It's actually very educational.
So obviously you've grown a tremendous following over the last number of years on, you know, across all of your platforms and channels where you talk about true crime content. What's that journey been like from kind of start to where you are now? Reflecting back, what does that make you feel?
It's definitely been a whirlwind. So it's something that I never even expected to happen. I was in the fashion industry for 15 years and never knew there was like a creator world or anything like that. I had listened to maybe one podcast in my life, and then randomly I just started talking about these cases that really bothered me or stuck with me for one reason or another, and it resonated with people who were hearing it and viewing it. And so that was all on social media, and then it just slowly took off from there.
So what got you into true crime to begin with?
I was a consumer, like so many people. I would watch every single Dateline. I would watch every single 2020. My sister and I, who's here with me today, we would have literally like Friday night froyo Dateline nights where we would just like eat food and like watch Dateline. And I've just kind of always been fascinated with it.
So what kind of moved you from being interested in consuming and like keeping up with the latest things to actually becoming somebody who's actually covering and reporting on these cases?
There were so many cases that I came across that I felt like there were so many unanswered questions or red flags, or have a bigger light on them because they weren't getting enough attention. And so that's really where I started. I was like, I just want to highlight certain cases, or like how this doesn't make sense, or why is this happening? And it just snowballed from there. And that still is what I really hold true to this day with any type of content that I'm covering. I just want to make sure that there's some sort of value add.
When was the first time that you made a video or put some content out? Do you remember what year it was?
2020.
Do you remember what it was about?
My very first episode ever was about Lori Vallow, and it was before she was ever even arrested. It was when she was still on the run and like when they were looking for the kids, and that was my introduction into the world of true crime on like a creator side.
Have you ever gone back and watched like old videos that you've made?
Oh my God, I cringe all the time. It gives me the ick, 100%. And just to give you some backstory, my YouTube channel is called 10 to Life, and it's because in the beginning, I started doing just 10-minute case recaps. That was like the niche of it all. So I would talk like I was on 3x speed. And so I watch it back and I'm like, okay, you sound like a lunatic.
Yeah, take a deep breath, slow it down a little bit.
Exactly.
So what was the goal initially? I mean, were you expecting to make, you know, this giant channel that a bunch of people would be following? Like, what was your vision for it?
That was definitely not the goal. I didn't even know that that existed. Like, as I said, I started just by making little 60-second things on TikTok. And when TikTok first happened in 2020 and when it became big, and then people wanted these longer deep dives. And so I was a YouTube person. I would go to YouTube to watch like Britney Spears music videos from the 90s that I didn't know there was like this whole world. And so I was like, okay, where am I going to upload this long video? I guess YouTube. And then I like realized what it was. That then kind of took off, and then I started the podcast. And so I've honestly just been learning as I go. It's all still very foreign to me. I'm not tech savvy. I am not like smooth with any of that. So it's a lot of trial and error.
So was there anybody like in the content creation space that you looked up to or that was kind of inspirational for you at that point?
I think a little bit of everybody. Like, I mean, I have listened to Up and Vanished for years. I watched Bailey Sarian here and there. I mean, I feel like a few iconic people who are definitely in the space. And so I still look to them for inspiration. And I feel like it's good to kind of just consume so much too, because it helps you get better and it helps challenge you in different ways as well.
How do you look to differentiate yourself, you know, especially in today's climate where there's so many people who are putting content out? Like, is there something that you feel like makes you stand apart?
I really just try to be true to myself. And so one of the things that I talk with everybody in my audience and my community about is like, I want to feel like your true crime best friend, where we're just talking. And like, I want to break it down for you how I would talk with my sister about something, or how I would want somebody to relay the information to me, and just kind of keep it real and authentic.
Have you seen how individual platforms have helped in a specific way, like socials versus your YouTube versus a podcast?
Yeah, I think for YouTube, it's like I've noticed a lot of people who watch YouTube on TV at home, and they like enjoy it almost as like their show at night, and they turn on YouTube, which is totally new to me. I've never heard of that and never done it personally. And so I feel like there's different ways of connecting. I think that like when you're in somebody's living room, it's very different than if they're hearing you on your commute to work. But it's still, you're at all of these touch points throughout somebody's day. And so I feel like all of the platforms are very unique.
So you put out a ton of content every week. Like, how do you do that? That seems like so much work.
I am in a constant state of like mania, if I'm being real. No, I film every single day. And when I left my job in fashion to do this full time, I kind of made a commitment to myself. And I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to treat it like a full time job. I'm going to be in my studio and office 8 to 5 every day. And that's what we do. And I have an incredible team that supports me.
How big is your team that you work with?
We now probably between like video editors, researchers, operations, probably like around like 12.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a good size team.
Yeah. They're great. And a lot of them, it's been great. I've been fortunate enough to source them from the community. So it's people who just have a passion for it, a love for it. And like, and again, who I just feel like are trustworthy in that regard. And it's just, there's nothing like it.
So if you're running that hard every day, I mean, have you experienced burnout? Is that something that kind of a constant struggle?
It is. It's weird. I get burnout, but I'm also someone who I constantly need to be busy. And my sister and I joked about it. We took a vacation over the summer where we were just going to like unplug, decompress. And she's like, I know. And I was like, I'm not bringing my recording equipment, which I did. And she's like, I know this isn't going to be a vacation, because even if you're not recording, your mind's going to be spinning of all the different things you should be doing. And so it's like, I just don't know how to turn it off, which I think is very unhealthy. And the burnout and the crash, I fear is coming. Yeah.
Well, hopefully that doesn't happen.
No, I know.
I know that your fans will be very disappointed if you have to take any kind of a break. Well, obviously, you put so many episodes out and so much content about a lot of different types of cases. How do you even go about choosing the things that you decide to talk about and report on?
That's a great question. So we do have a case submission tab on our website where people have the opportunity to either request a case, or if they were a victim or a survivor of a case, they get to put a request in there too if they want their story told. So we use that a lot. We also cover a lot of current events. So if there's something breaking in the news that we feel like needs awareness or needs eyes on it, we'll cover things like that are breaking. We, of course, try to be very delicate in that coverage because it's still ongoing, it's not solved. So there's a variety of ways that we'll choose to greenlight a case, but at the end of the day, it kind of comes back down to, like, is there a value add here? Is there a reason that we should cover it? One of the most highly requested cases that I get all the time is JonBenet. I've never covered it, and I don't think I ever will, because, yeah, it's a different perspective possibly, but it's also, there's no value add. It's been covered, everybody knows it, you know?
Are there specific types of cases that you prefer to cover?
I don't know that there's any I would say that I prefer to cover. I stay away a little bit from any, like, from the horrible child cases. Unfortunately, in a lot of those cases, it's their parents who are the ones who did something. So I'm like, if we're not going to be the voice for them, their own family won't be. They're the ones who did this to them. So, but it's very difficult. I'm a mom myself. And so those have been tougher for sure.
Have the types of cases that you've talked about evolved over time?
I think my coverage has for sure evolved, and I think sometimes now with the cases, I want to go into more of the complex ones and, like, kind of go down the rabbit hole and, like, challenge myself to look at things differently too, where it may feel so clear cut when you first hear about something. It's like I try to poke holes in it and see, like, how can we come into it from a different angle and, like, challenge ourselves with it really.
So I know that sometimes it's a little bit more of a surface type of a coverage versus more in depth. Does one feel more natural to you?
I feel like the in-depth does, just because I am inherently very nosy, okay? Like, I like to get in there. I like to go on the Reddit threads. I like to, like, get in the Facebook groups, contact it. Like, so I would feel like deep dives are, like, my vibe, because I'm already, like, scouring things as it is.
We'll be right back after a quick break. And we're back.
One of the cases that we have been looking to cover is Robin Gardner. What were your thoughts on that case as you looked into it?
So when I had first heard about it, it was one where I, again, think it is very clear cut what I believe happened, but it's one where I felt like there wasn't a lot of coverage out there at the time when I was looking into it.
So if someone's not familiar with the case, can you give just, like, a quick, like, 1 minute summary of the details?
So she was on vacation and she had been dating somebody, and there was just, like, a lot of toxicity in the relationship, and there was a lot of shadiness from this person's past, which I don't want to get too far in the weeds with it. And there was some involvement with life insurance and different sums of money, and it looked as though it was very intentional what happened, especially when past relationships came forward, you know, with their stories and what happened to them and their experiences.
Was there, like, one major red flag that as you started to kind of research and look more into it that you're like, oh, this definitely, to me, makes it seem like something that I need to be reporting on?
I mean, just none of the story was adding up. I mean, there were so many things from the day that everything went down and the timeline of events and everything. It just, there were so many things that didn't add up. And then when you see and hear what the outcome is, it's like you kind of make the common deduction of what happened. Unfortunately, we see so many cases where there's, of course, violence against women. We see violence against everyone. And it's just one of those where it's like, it needs to be talked about more, because I do think that the more awareness you bring to it, hopefully educates people who are listening, and they know what to look for and they know how to, you know, watch out for certain things or see certain red flags.
What do you think in a case like this is going to help actually bring clarity, bring justice? What's it going to take for there actually to be some sort of closure?
So I'm somebody who firmly believes that the more people that talk about something or are aware about something, the more likely that a tip will be generated or a lead of some sort. Somebody maybe heard something or saw something, or after the fact, somebody's maybe gloating and they slip up and say something. So it's like, but people won't know what to look for or what kind of information should stand out unless they know about it. And so I believe the more awareness that's out there, the more likely you are to hear something.
So it used to be that, you know, reporting on these types of cases was primarily done by, like, legacy media. Obviously, in the last number of years, we've seen kind of the growth of, like, the quote unquote, like, citizen sleuth movement, in covering cases. Like, what do you make of that?
It's really interesting, right? Because I feel like sometimes the, you know, as you put it, the citizen sleuth, they can cause more damage than good. And I think that there is a very fine line of how involved you can get and what you should be getting involved in. But I also think that there's not a lot of trust out there with the mainstream media, unfortunately, these days. And people have an agenda for one reason or another, not all the time, but sometimes. So I think that consumers like to hear from other people and like trustworthy sources. And again, not in this very buttoned up news anchor voice that feels detached, but where they feel connected to you.
You've been a contributor on networks like Court TV and News Nation. What has that experience been like for you?
Pretty surreal. I mean, I grew up watching Nancy Grace, and let me just say, I'm terrified of her, okay? For sure. I feel like anybody in their right mind is, okay? She is like a bulldog in a great way. So being asked to be on these shows has definitely been surreal because I looked up to them in the space. I still look up to them in the space. And it's a really big privilege.
So you also recently did some coverage of the Karen Reed trial. What was that experience like for you?
It was interesting because obviously there was a lot of division out there, right? And I had covered it years ago when everything first took place. And then it had this whole new like renewed interest when Body in the Snow came out, when everybody started watching the second trial. And I ended up getting in touch with her family and I went out there and I attended court with her parents. And I was very much of the mentality of, and still to this day, which I have no, you know, I have never held back. I don't know what truly happened that night. But I do know that there was way too much reasonable doubt to convict her. I think that there was so much shadiness and evidence that didn't match and mishandling of things along the way to where I felt like there was no justice in them trying to get that murder conviction against her. And so I'm happy with the outcome, but it definitely was a whirlwind because that was one that like we saw just pop culture even like kind of just take it and just go wild. They still are going wild with it. And I think it's kind of changing the landscape a little bit with true crime too.
Why do you think a case like that just, you know, hits headlines and people just, you know, they're on the edge of their seats? What makes that case fall into that category versus maybe some others?
I think people like conspiracy. I personally don't. I try not to be a conspiracy theorist. Sometimes I get swept up in it, but I'll be honest. But I think people, they're more open-minded to the possibility of corruption, conspiracy, and things like that. So this case had all of that, and it had all of these unknowns. And I think for me, at least, too, a big fascination with true crime, I think, I don't know, maybe from everybody or just myself, but it's almost like the puzzle piece of it all, trying to problem solve, strategize, figure it out. And so with that case, I think a lot of it was people trying to figure out what really happened. And there's that challenge and problem solving element to it. And so I think everybody just was very interested because of that.
Is that something that you want to do more of moving forward?
I would love to. Yeah, definitely.
Any that you have your eyes on that you'd potentially like to start doing?
Well, I definitely plan on being at the Barry Morphew trial, for sure. And there's a lot that I've been following. It's tough because, again, I have two small kids, so I can't always get there. And that's why I'm so fortunate with my team, too, because I can have them go cover some certain trials. But Barry Morphew is next on my list, for sure.
There's a lot of discussion, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, just about the idea of, like, ethics in true crime. Not making everything salacious, making sure that we're, you know, talking about the victim and the impact on the victim's family. What does like ethical true crime look like to you?
I think ethical true crime is if you're not exploiting in like, to your point, a salacious story. It's somebody's worst day of their life. They either lose their loved ones, their family members, or they survive something horrible. But the root of it is it's the worst day of their life. So somebody taking that and spinning it and just churning content over and over and coming at it with like the salacious details, overly dramatic things, things that aren't true. It's like, I think people can lose their way a little bit with that. And I've seen creators, unfortunately, do that, as I'm sure you have, where they just are in it for the clicks or the money. And I don't even think they believe what they're saying half of the time. And it's almost as though they've become so detached that this is a real person's life and story. So I think it can be a fine line and everybody has mixed opinions, but if you go into it knowing what your goal is and that you're going to stay true and remember that these are real people that this happened to, then hopefully, you know, you're doing more good than harm.
Back after a short break.
Hey, listeners, if you have a tip or theories about a case you want to share or a case of interest you'd like to recommend to us, then we want to hear from you. Email us, cases@tenderfoot.tv. DM us on Instagram @UAVweekly or give us a call at 770-545-6411. You can also join the conversation on our Discord at discord.gg/upandvanished. Now, back to the show.
How have you found the balance between covering, you know, all aspects of the case, you know, researching, putting all the pertinent information out there, even if it may be difficult, but it's, you know, part of what needs to be shared, with also balancing, you know, respect and care for the family and of the victim?
I think it's just doing your due diligence. Of course, getting as much information as you can and fact-checking all of that, but also I've talked with so many victims' families where they want the legal terms used or the sensitive terms because that is what their loved one went through. That is what this monster did to them. And so I personally get frustrated if it's a YouTube or somebody like that where they make you censor all these things because you're then diminishing what their experience was and you're watering down what that the monster did to those people, you know? I think it's a fine line.
Obviously, with the amount of cases that you look into, it's very heavy content. It's very difficult. But it's necessary work. But how do you protect yourself, your mental health? You know, how do you kind of find that balance between doing what you believe in, you know, deep within your gut, but also knowing that, you know, it can take a toll on you?
Absolutely. I feel like, I don't know if this is healthy or not, but I have found a way to compartmentalize so that when I go home, I truly try to turn it off and be present with my family and just like enjoy and be thankful and grateful and be in the moment. I also have found myself not consuming true crime as much as I used to just because I'm doing it so much every single day that the last thing I want to do is like at home watch another horrible, you know, situation. So I try to just like protect my mind when I'm outside of it to just, you know, be in the moment and be positive and happy.
Has there been like a high mark from the work that you've done? Something that you reflect on and just very, you know, special to you or something you're particularly proud of?
I think anytime a victim's family reaches out and or comes up, even here at CrimeCon, coming up to the booth and just being thankful of the coverage that we've done or how we told their loved one's story, that every single time will be the high mark just because it makes me remember and, you know, just it reinforces what we're doing and it just makes me feel like, okay, we're on the right track here.
So somebody, you know, follows you, you know, is inspired by the work that you're doing and they say, you know, I feel like that's something I could do myself. What kind of advice, what kind of guidance would you give them as they're starting out?
So I get that question all the time and I tell everyone, just start. Just, you don't need any fancy equipment. You don't need any sort of plan in place. If there's something you're passionate about and there's a story you want to tell and there's something that you feel like needs to be out there, just start talking and the rest will come.
Well, Annie, this has been amazing. We really appreciate you and your time, all the work that you're doing. What's next for you? Anything in particular you want to shout out?
So I'm on tour right now. So I'm about to go back out in a few days and then we'll be done at the end of October. And yeah, just continuing to chug away on the podcast and YouTube. Just lots of content going out.
And if people don't already follow you, where can they follow you and all of your channels?
So they can follow either on social media, which is @_AnnieElise, YouTube, 10 to Life, podcast, Serialistly, and yeah, that's
amazing.
It. Yeah.
Thanks, Annie.
Thanks so much.
All right, appreciate it.
Breaking into this industry is hard without kids, so listening to Annie Elise tell her story is really inspiring. What started as a social media hobby has turned into a career, and it sounds like she has a lot more she wants to accomplish. And I personally really appreciate her making an effort to cover cases where there is value to add and not just regurgitating the same information. We're super grateful Annie spent a few minutes with our team during her busy CrimeCon schedule. CrimeCon offers such a unique blend of experts, influencers, survivors, victims, all in one setting. And we hope you enjoy listening to some of the conversations we were able to have there. Y'all, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Up and Vanish Weekly. Be sure to tune in next week as we dig into another new case. Until next time.
Up and Vanish Weekly is a production of Tenderfoot TV in association with Odyssey. Your hosts are Maggie Freeling and myself, Payne Lindsay. The show is written by Maggie Freeling, myself, and John Street. Executive producers are Donald Albright and myself. Lead producer is John Street. Additional production by Meredith Stedman and Mike Rooney. Research for the series by Jamie Albright, Celicia Stanton, and Carolyn Talmadge. Edit and mix by Dylan Harrington and Sean Nerney. Supervising producer is Tracy Kaplan. Artwork by Byron McCoy. Original music by Makeup and Vanity Set. Special thanks to Oren Rosenbaum and the team at UTA, Beck Media and Marketing, and the Nord Group. For more podcasts like Up and Vanish Weekly, search Tenderfoot TV on your favorite podcast app or visit us at tenderfoot.tv. Thanks for listening.